listeners. This is Viv from the Black Block. I'm usually on a Monday, but we have a very special broadcast today and for the rest of the week from Brisbane Aboriginal Sovereign Embassy here at Musgrave Park.
And that's Jagera land.
Jagera country, land. That's right. And, so we're live, Robbie.
Yes, and the last song we just heard was the Black Shadow Band. I'm not too sure about what the name was, but deadly band anyway. Anyway, we're sitting here at famous Musgrave Park, overlooking the city of Brisbane. On a beautiful spring day. Not too sure how well it's going down here in Melbourne, but it's a beautiful day up here. And we're amongst all the beautiful mob here from Brisbane and around about.
People from all over the country have flown in, yeah, to spend the next week.
And we're just, this is the first day of the program, where it's just sort of settling in and we're setting up camp. We've got a fantastic stage set up. Basically, we've taken over the whole park. And we've got a beautiful hall here that we're operating out of. How many people would you say were here at the moment, Viv?
100.
100 now?
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's a nice relaxed mood. And it was pretty intense today, even though the official workshops and that haven't started. They do start tomorrow. And tomorrow we start off with some yarning circles.
Before we go any further, we should introduce our brother here. He's got a microphone in front of him. His name's Gary Santo from Charters Towers. How you going, Gary?
Yeah, good, Rob and Viv. Thanks for having me on your show. And thanks to all those listeners, 3CR, is it?
Yep, that's
it. Yeah, good to be on.
No worries, hey. You done a bit of radio back in your day, 4K, K1G?
Yeah, that's right, Rob. Yeah, I did a bit of a stint with 4K1G, community radio station in Townville. There for probably about 8 months or maybe 12 months, I think it was. But it was all part of my bit of training into the media, Aboriginal media, and it was quite exciting. Unfortunately, events took me in another direction and I had to sort of leave that and had to follow a bit of another career path. But, yeah, I've always maintained it was a very interesting part of my life and I enjoyed it thoroughly.
Yeah, I feel the same. I think it's very empowering to be able to speak on radio and express yourself.
Absolutely. I like visual arts, but there's something about audio and transferring information, getting information and transferring information with each other. I think it's really, really gnarly, yeah.
Yeah. Now, we're up here for the G20, which is the richest 20 countries in the world, I suspect, all meeting here in Brisbane. And when they're due here on the next weekend, is it, Viv? On the
Saturday.
Saturday and the Sunday. It's a pretty major operation going on there in the city here. I think they've blocked off a number of the streets. It's all getting a bit closed down, but we're sitting here in Musgrave Park here and contemplating our plans to, I suppose, make our voices heard or make our presence felt here. Because I think we've got a lot to say. There's a lot of Australia's not open for business, like Tony Abbott would have you believe. There's a lot of unfinished business, and we're intending to ensure that that message gets across the best way that we can do it.
Absolutely. Now, I agree. I'm in Towers, which is pretty much far north Queensland. Come down to give my support to the Brisbane Black Embassy and all the other groups as well, the alliances groups. I mean, it's pretty much a common cause, the environment, you know, corporate greed, all this sort of thing happening. And here we are, have the world leaders in Brisbane for this, you know, pretty much planning their assault on Indigenous peoples and social justice for people around the world, you know.
And on our land.
On our land.
I think a lot of this whole, the economics of the world today are based around tearing our land apart.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they don't really care, I suppose, for grassroots people or Indigenous issues in general. You know, this is a manifest of what the corporate greed does. They just go around willy-nilly destroying the environment and cultural heritage, disrespecting Indigenous peoples around the world, you know.
So, I'll ask you, Viv, first. What are you hoping to see, get out of G20 experience?
I'll just hear to be a part of the voice, to be the front line, I suppose. Make some noise. We're not gone. We're not invisible. But we're here. We've still got issues.
How do you feel about how the setup? This is the first time you've been
here. Yes, this is amazing. I'm excited to be here and honoured to be amongst so many blackfellas that care and are willing to, you know, put themselves out there. What else do we do? This is a critical situation as far as I can tell.
Yeah. I've just got to jump in there. Look, yep. I've got to admit, I lived in a pretty isolated little community. I'm pretty vocal in my community. I do deal with mining companies, part of our native title obligations. I'm not convinced by native title. I think it's a poor man treaty. It doesn't give us any rights whatsoever. But it's something that was thrown on the table, and we have to negotiate the best outcome for our community for that.
And while we're not bad at doing it, I remember they threw that thing called CDEP, which is an impossible thing to work, but blackfellas actually made that work, particularly in our communities.
Yeah. So no, it was something that I didn't have a great deal to do with that directly, but I could see the benefits where some of our community members who never had that opportunity of working gave them a reason to get up and do something, have a cause to get up in the morning and do something. But like you said, the long-term benefits just aren't there. I mean, they just more or less stay in a loop of doing slave labour, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. As I understand.
Yeah, the welfare working trap that average people are living in. Yeah. We need to see the end of that. Welfare is what I like to say.
Yeah.
And start to deal with average people in a real way, you know.
Yeah.
Where's the recognition of our law in this country? You know, why is there genocide still going on here? You know, why are we the most jailed people on the planet? What's going on with our children in terms of the suicide and the abuse that's going on? The chronic, you know, institutionalised abuse of our children in this country. You know, I made sure I come up here for this G20 because I'm feeling that time's running out, not just for our people, everyone around this globe, and what tells me that is the state of the environment. You know, we're connected to the environment. What happens to the land happens to us.
Yeah, you're spot on, Rob. All those things that you just mentioned, I mean, about the suicide and that, I mean, it doesn't make pretty news. You can turn the news on, pick up a paper, the statistics are there, and it's grim. And how can this happen in such a rich, resource, wealthy country, you know?
When we're such a small minority in that very rich country, which belongs to ours, right?
Well, sometimes I just feel that if the government could, with a swipe of a pen, sign the, you know, agreement, and, you know, they could fix things, I feel, easily, quite easily.
What do you hope to get out of G20?
Well, I first of all, I've got to say, I've Facebook people, and I've started talking to people down here before I came down here. So it was an opportunity for me to actually network personally one-on-one with people. And I got a great satisfaction out of that. You're actually putting a person, character to, rather than a face and profile picture.
True that.
So
I've enjoyed that part of it.
And like I said, like I lived in my community pretty much in a drought community where issues aren't really talked about openly. Because like everyone else, they just pretty much do their mundane lives. Either they work or they're not working, and they're caught in that system, I suppose. And they dare not to question why is this so? Why is there intergenerational poverty? Why are students dropping out the same as they did in the 70s and the 60s and the 80s, etc., you know?
It doesn't seem that we've improved at all. I feel that we've gone backwards in terms of our development in certain ways, you know. Might have a bit more material things, but I think there's a deep void there spiritually still for our people. You know, these issues haven't been resolved properly. You know, native title caused more problems. You know, reconciliation's a joke.
Yeah.
And the idea of including us into the Constitution 100 years after the fact.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't really cut it for me. And the idea of saying sorry for the generations of child removal, which is an act of genocide.
Pretty much. They're all band-aid solutions, really. I mean, the Constitution, it's a British Act, Parliament Act, you know. They neglected to put us in the include us in that, to recognise us. So I feel that if the recognise campaign itself is a bit of a dead duck. I think it's just government generated. And really, at the end of the day, and I'll quote people like Gary Foley, what good will it do for us at the end of the day? What benefit will it do for your Aboriginal people?
Well, they're not really telling anybody what's going to be in the Constitution either, and how we're going to be reflected in that. So, it's pretty dodgy stuff, and this is how we're expected to operate.
Mm.
So if you had the opportunity, Gary, to address the G20 leaders, what would you say to them?
Oh, gee, you hit me with a big one there, Rob, but I don't know.
I'm going to ask you in a minute, good too.
Yeah. I don't know. I suppose it's you want to get to know them as a person, I suppose. You want them to take that mask off, that parading as, you know, world leaders. You want to see the human side of them. You want to see the human responses from them when you ask them, what are you going to do about this? You know, what are you going to do about poverty or the degradation of the environment? You know, you want a natural human response, but dare I say it, they would not do that. They'd uphold that image of being the world leaders and intelligent people, but are they? You know, you've got to question them.
No.
What would you, if you had the chance for you to address these G20 leaders, what would you say to them?
Your time's short. Because we're getting it together.
Yeah.
We all are.
People power.
Yeah.
Cool.
And this is a great example of it here today. I can feel some real good energy coming here. I remember coming up here in 1982. And there was a lot of fear put into that our mob about if you come up to Brisbane, these coppers are going to smash you. This was, the Vijelkie Peterson days and Russ Hinds, the police commissioner. And they were pretty full on. This is when, like, apartheid was pretty full on.
Oh, yeah, Russ Hinds and Joby Okapiti, they had their reputation in those decades, didn't they? I mean, selling out of Queensland land and to the Japanese, and their theory on Indigenous people that we were organising militants in the bush, you know, ready to take over the state of Queensland. I mean, this is a bogus thing they dreamt up, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, when is it, you know, it wasn't the average people committing the acts of terror.
Mm.
You know, in my mind, if it wasn't for the acts of terror and the policies of genocide, Australia wouldn't exist.
Mm.
So it wasn't us, you know, we didn't travel to someone else's country and attack them.
No.
What's happened to our people.
Yeah.
I want to see these global leaders take that message. You know, if you want to deal with Australia, you're dealing with a criminal here, and you're dealing with the proceeds of crime. And, but I think Australians are able to get away with all this stuff because they're not a real nation. They're still a colony, you know. They haven't got a treaty, they haven't got consent. And to me, they haven't got jurisdiction in this country. They're pretty fundamental questions that need to be resolved. And I'd like these G20 countries here to know that. To be dealing with Australia, you're dealing with a criminal and with the proceeds of crime. I'd love to make that loud and clear to the rest of the world.
Sure. And in my community, I sort of voice that, that sovereignty movement, that mentality, because, of course, we've got to action it. We just can't hold a banner and wave sovereignty. We've got to have a mindset that we are sovereign people and we have rights. We deserve rights under the UN to have human right protection, just as any other groups or distinct people in the world. And we're lacking that at the moment.
How do you do things like that in your community? How do you promote the idea of sovereignty? What sort of programs do you do?
I think it's just got to start from the grassroots. I think people got to understand that, you know, you descend from a noble people, and you've got to implant that. You've got to think that. You've got to walk that. You've got to speak that. And yeah, you can be on par with non-Indigenous Australians. That's fine, but you've got that hereditary descendancy from that nobility, and I do that. I do that every day, and everything that I do, that I express myself, it is because I'm very proud of my ancestors, and I know they walk with us, and they are with us all the time. And, you know,
but how come you've got that strength, Gary? And a lot of our mob, we don't seem to have that sort of inner strength like that and understanding that.
Just the environment, people. It's no fault of anyone's.
It's got a lot to do with your family, I suspect.
Yeah.
Having a strong family.
Well, my father was a pastoralist. He started, he was taken out of school when he was 14 years of age and was made to muster cattle out on the cattle station up around my territory. He had a very strong work ethics. Okay. And he used to walk down the street and people would respect him. Right. You know, non-Indigenous people would come up and I'd be like a young 12, 11-year-old boy looking up and say, gee, Dad knows a few people, you know. Yeah. And I thought, So I suppose, you know, some of us like to deny that we take traits from our parents, but I think that's one of the shining things that I do take from my father, that he's instilled that hard work ethic and respecting people and expect that respect back as well, you know.
Viv, what would you say? Do you see sovereign land? How do we achieve that in our communities, and what would you suggest we do?
I reckon the journey starts with the individual within. It starts the struggles in here, inside. Have that struggle and then work it out and then bring it out here.
Yeah, that's right. That's, like I said, that's a mindset you've got to instill in yourself.
Yeah.
And then it just infects you. It just spreads out to your community and then your region.
It's empowering.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then the more Murrays you run into nationally, when people who've got that same sentiment about themselves, you start connecting straight away,
yes.
You know?
And you start seeing... That's a great example of it here.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, as I mentioned before, I was living in a bit of a drought region with people who think like myself, but down here I'm starting to connect with people, talk with people, and you start feeling you're not crazy like they were saying you were, you know? You actually,
Yes. I trust myself. That's a big difference from me now to a few years ago.
Sure, yeah.
Rather than trust the world and how they define me. I define me.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
One of the big problems that, you know, we've got a lot of communities across this country. We've got a very powerful organisation if we connect it together. And one of the problems that we've got, we're isolated. Mm. This is why we're feeling like we're on our own and the situation's hopeless. That's why I love the idea of radio and you know, television. As long as we're in control of these technologies, yeah, we can do a lot. Because they've cut us off and isolated us and been able to deal with us as individual communities. But if we came together as a black nation, you know, we're a mighty force. I know it.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, I agree with that. Absolutely.
And that's when we can take our stage. It should be called G21. You know, we're a nation too, and they should recognise us. They're on our land.
Yeah, you know, well, why haven't we got a representative up there
that's
speaking
right,
on our behalf?
That's right. You know? Now, they're all trading on the resources in this country. Mm-hmm. You know, where's our place in all of this?
That's right. I mean, I thought it was just disrespectful. Obama should be down here. You know what I mean? He should be coming around the fire, talking to the grassroots people.
You'd think so, right?
Show a bit of respect, you know?
Show a bit of respect, eh?
Yep.
Yeah, not possible. I think it's a good time to go to a song now. This one's One Fire.
Spirit, one fire. Everybody has a fire.
Yeah, welcome back to 3CR, Melbourne Community Radio Station.
Yeah, 8.55 on the AM dial.
Oh, cool. Thank you for filling up, Rob. I didn't know the way.
And they're streaming live, and they're on the internet too. Last night is the same thing, isn't it? Anyway, yeah, big hi to all the mob down in Melbourne. I hope it's hope you're all going well there. Gary, you were talking about how you got interest in coming down to G20. You want to flesh that a little bit more?
Sure, not a problem, Rob. I suppose it stems back a fair few years, I suppose. I've always been interested in social issues in the world, in my region, in my community. I suppose it's just black consciousness, the black awareness of how and why my people are in such a desperate state, you know. I see it in my own community, back in Charter Towers, back in North Queensland. Alcohol and drugs in the community and how that trickled down, unemployment, school dropout, all that sort of thing. So I just got myself asking the question, you know, what, why? Why are we like this, you know?
You know, personally, I never set out to be a political person, you know. First thing from my mind, getting involved with law is all boring for me, but you realise that you have to do this. You know, and because no one else is doing it. We have to do it. We can see it. Yeah. Like, if we're going to survive, we're going to have to do these things, this sort of work. It's hard work, and there's no rewards, really.
Yeah.
But, and before me, there was lots of people who struggled hard to get anywhere, you know. Just imagine how hard it was for the older generations.
Absolutely,
than me, you
know? Absolutely.
So it sort of owe it to our mob there. Yeah. You know, they didn't get the opportunity to have their say. We got the chance now. We got something. This technology, let's take advantage of it. Let's step up. You know? I know we're behind the eight ball, our mob, but we just got to find it somewhere.
Absolutely.
Because there's a lot at stake for us.
That's right. And that's why I elevated myself to those community responsibility. Like, I sit on a couple of boards back at home, and there's great responsibility that comes with that. And like a lot of communities, you have infighting, you have name calling, you know, you got all these sort of things. But I try to look above that all. I just want to try and make my people stand out from the crowd by doing the right thing, you know. You're right, we don't go out to be black activists or apolitical. It comes to us.
It's sort of forced to do it, aren't
you? Yeah, it comes to us, and we, you know, either you step up to that role and take on those responsibilities, or you sit back and let it happen. I mean, you become part of the problem. You don't try anything to change anything.
We've been ground down for, for 240 years, you know.
Yep.
And we're all affected by things like deaths in custody, having...
Yep.
Everyone's affected by children being removed from our families.
Absolutely.
And the outcomes of that, and that's ongoing intergenerational trauma that's going on and on and on.
Sure.
Where does it end? How do we stop it? And what can we do here? You know, this is an opportunity for us, I suspect. We've got the global leaders.
Yep.
I know Australia's not going to be telling the rest of the world about our condition and they're not giving the right story out there, anyway, so it's an opportunity for us. What can we do, brother?
Well, I don't know. Why don't we have a Indigenous or a social G20 ourselves, which parallel with what we got, you know? Why don't we have an Indigenous G20, where while they're sitting in their hotels and eating caviar and planning how to exploit the resources of the world, why don't we have the opposite? You know, a bit of people power.
I like your style. That's how I operate. Opposite.
Yeah.
Whatever they expect, we do something opposite.
Absolutely.
Or mirror, in fact, what's going on there.
That's right. But ours will be based on, you know, positiveness, love, respect, all of that. I mean, surely we've got enough people in the world that can help, would vote for the positive, loving, respectful aspects of a meeting rather than, you know, planning to rip up the resources of the world.
Yeah, that's well put, brother, because that's what it is. It's our laws, which are sharing, caring, looking after country and people, against tearing the land apart and abusing the people or, you know, exploiting the people.
And dare I say it, Rob, look, I think inclusively. I think we've got a lot of brothers and sisters of non-Indigenous heritage. I think they are pretty much a focal point we need to focus on. We've got to get our young people talking to their young people, you know, and sharing experiences. I mean, when I was growing up, I used to have a lot of white friends, and still do. They'd be, talk about their overseas travel and backpacking. But, you know, where was our youth who would be go backpacking and travelling and experiencing the world, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's, in my eyes, I made a suggestion the other day. I said, why don't we start an Aboriginal backpackers, where we have a chain of backpackers, Aboriginal run and own, and people from overseas, young people, can come and see and experience the Aboriginal aspect.
We call it Blackpackers.
Blackpackers, exactly.
But wouldn't that be the go, eh? You know, if you go to our country, you want to see the culture here.
Yes.
Here's the best one to pass out, us.
Yes.
But we haven't got the facilities and the resources to cater for that.
No,
I'm sure
don't.
The rest of the world would want to come here and learn from us,
rather
than have it interpreted by non-Aboriginal people.
Exactly. And don't forget, we're also fighting that stigma that the government used all its resources, and this is the decades of neglect, to give that image, a perception of Aboriginal people not being worthy of people. I mean, that was transferred internationally.
Yes.
I mean, that's what we're combating. We need to have strategies to combat that, you know.
You got any thoughts about that, Viv?
I just think you got some great ideas, Gary.
Thanks, Viv. Yep, no worries.
And you had mentioned before about young people, you know, stepping up. On Wednesday here at Musgrove Park, there's a panel, it's Nation to Nation, Young People's Forum, and there's four dear little speakers that have returned recently from Turtle Island in Canada with travelling on Aboriginal passports.
Yeah, I was actually following this on Facebook.
Yeah.
Clayton Dixon and Barry Spearham.
Yep.
Before they left Australia, I was reading their posts of what they were going to do, what was it all about, and I was just congratulating them and wishing them all the best from where I was. And I was following their posts all the way, and of course it was exciting when the Australian government refused to stamp their Aboriginal passport leaving the country, but I think they got it stamped coming back in from New Zealand.
They did, yes.
Yeah, yes. They did. Did
and travelling with Bo and Callum was Mariki Onus and Pakiri Ruska. And Mariki's here, and
yes,
Pakiri's on later in the week. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Done really
because,
well, didn't really proud of those fellas.
Yeah,
it's a big call to do that.
They're ambassadors. They're our ambassadors going over and meeting, making contact with other Indigenous groups, sharing our fights, our struggles. And it's quite interesting. I think Callum mentioned on a couple of his posts that they're very well organised in their resistance to mining companies out there. I mean, we're talking about blockades and really into it. I'm... In my community, we have a few mines, and my community, I talk to my community members about the same thing. I say to them, look, we're not happy with what we're getting for them. Why don't we blockade a road too? Mind you, I used to work in the mining industry for 7 years myself, so I've seen both sides of that, and I realise it's just not worth it. You know, I understand people need money. You need to survive, but... Why are they throwing, making policies where they're giving Indigenous people mining jobs? Why aren't they giving them environmental jobs or ranger jobs, things that are compatible to our culture, you know?
Well, enslaves our people that way, become dependent on the system rather than independent of it, as we were.
I took no real joy in the mining industry. Yeah, it was the money at the end of the day, but really you're helping destroy the Mother Earth.
It's a bit of a shame that, you know, you see it globally, the world over, where Indigenous people are forced to destroy their own environment to keep
survive.
Themselves alive these days. And, and like you say, why can't blackfellas look after their own culture in this country?
Exactly.
And there's probably enough jobs there, there's probably more jobs in that than there is blackfellas in the country.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Why
don't blackfellas get to manage their own royalty money?
Yeah.
Why don't we get to... manage our heritage, culture, our intellectual property.
Yeah.
You know, there's more than enough things out there for us to be engaged in the right way.
Absolutely.
They're forcing us to do the opposite.
I mean, you just take the Western Australian Cultural Heritage Act at the moment and the brothers and sisters over there, the fight, they've got to protect, you know, 1,000-year-old cultural heritage site. It's a farce. It really is.
The danger is once you get legislated, well, then it's up to the white minister. He can destroy your site.
Yeah, and the buck stops with him. I mean, there's no panel. There's no rights of appeal. I think that's just irresponsible. And he's lopsided. His opinion is orientated around the mining, companies.
Well, he's supporting, the Australian government, inverted commas. And I don't even really see him as a proper government. It's still a British colony. That will only change. Can only change whether if they did a treaty, which was consensual with Aboriginal people.
Sure.
They haven't got that consent.
Yeah.
And without that treaty, because treaties end wars. It's another thing that ends a war. You have a treaty, a peace treaty. We never got that.
Yeah.
So we're still in a state of undeclared war in this country. And if you look at the statistics on average people, morbidity and incarceration, you'd think there's a war going on here. Our condition. Look at our condition. We're dying at these young ages, and the age of soldiers we're dying at.
Mm. No, it's obviously, it's covert genocide. That's what it is. I mean, Australia ratifies these covenants with the UN, but they don't follow them through. They don't put them domestically. They don't apply them domestically.
Well, what's that about? Is that a criminal act? The Genocide Convention comes to mind, for one. Like, Australia ratified that convention back in
1946, I think.
49, I think, in Australia.
Yep.
Robert Menzies' government. The first time the Liberal Party came to power, they had the task of legislating against the crime of genocide in light of the Second World War.
Sure.
They never did.
No, they didn't. Because I think, as it was pointed out, they were afraid that the Australian Aboriginal would take them to court.
So the genocide continues.
That's right.
So why didn't the United Nations force Australia to do this?
I think my own opinion on that is I think the UN, because they've allowed them to be, and they weren't bona fide members, they've allowed them in on the basis of signing the League of Nations and the Versailles Treaty. That was the only two things that Australia signed which gave them gave the impression that they were an independent country, but that was not the case. Other countries have bona fide inclusion because of their membership state status.
Yes. And, it gets me how Australia can be sitting on the United Nations Security Council as the president of that organisation, yet they don't recognise any of the convention laws. They suspend the Race Discrimination Act willy-nilly. They've done it with the 10-point plan.
Anti-intervention.
Suspending the Race Discrimination. What the hell is that about?
Yeah.
Haven't got a genocide convention? You look at the Refugee Convention, the rights of women and children. How can they be sitting as the president of the United Nations Security? It makes you wonder.
It just boggles the mind. It just boggles the mind how they can just flirt and breach all, the UN obligations and international obligations. It just boggles the mind how they can get away with it.
One more thing. This is on top of the idea of terra nullis, the idea this was an empty continent.
Yeah,
good one.
Yeah.
Hey, and, white-only policy, constitution, generations in detention, removing our children, and they get to sit as the president of the United Nations Security Council. Just the mind boggles.
It does, mate. I don't know how they can get away with it. They're so brazen. They're just, breaching all their obligations. And they sit there parading around on the international stage as they're quick to condemn other countries or leaders who they deem breaching human rights laws, international laws. But look at them. I mean, that's hypocrisy at its best, ain't it?
Personified.
Yep.
Yes. I think we should go for a song. Did we play Roger Knox before? Can we play Roger Knox on dedicate this one to his brother Terry?
When I was young, my mother told me, please be good and don't do wrong. by Dad and make him happy. Your mother dear will soon be gone. These last few words had brought me sorrow, for I knew I was alone. My eyes were filled with heavy teardrops. I knew that God had called her. Yes, we miss you, Mama. It's so plain to see. And as we live through each day with happy memories, and time stood still, Mama, when you said goodbye. For the love that we shared, I know will never die. Yes, it will be a brighter day.
Okay, welcome back. And that was Brighter Day by Roger Knox. And you're listening to 3CR. And we're coming live from Musgrave Park, the Brisbane Aboriginal Sovereign Embassy. And we've got a new guest here, and it's Bo Spiram.
Yama.
And Gary's still with us, and Robbie, we've kicked Robbie off for a bit. So tell us a bit about yourself, Bo, and what you're doing here, and
how
you've been doing it.
Yep. My name is Bo Spiram. My mob is Gimilaray, Kumin, Marawari. Those nations are all situated sort of northern New South Wales, southern Queensland. I was born in Sydney and then moved up to Brisbane in like 97. Been a part of the Brisbane community since 97. I've been involved with the marches and rallies ever since I was young, when old man would, you know, bring us, be a part of, you know, a lot of the community events here in Brisbane. And then me and my older brother, he's walking around here, we would actually wag school in high school to attend a lot of the marches and the rallies. And out there.
I did that. I remember doing that, yeah.
Like if we couldn't get dad's signature, my other brother, who's got the same name as him, he'd forge his signature, you know, so we can, you know, get out of school and go to some of these rallies and marches.
What a bad way to get out of school.
That's it, you know. You know, like you said, you know, we're live here from Brisbane at Musgrave Park. The embassy's, you know, put on, you know, the event, First Nations Response to G20, the Genocidal 20, we're calling it. If you wanted to check out some stuff online, just follow the hashtag Genocidal 20. We've been posting, you know, for the last month and a half.
On Twitter, yeah.
Twitter, on Facebook, Instagram, and out there. You know, and that sort of gives more context to, you know, the whole, 20 nations being involved, you know, with, you know, economical discussions about, you know, how they deprive Indigenous peoples, you know, so calling it Genocidal 20, you know, takes the cake, you know, off, you know, what they're actually doing. But yeah, you know, like, official date that we start is tomorrow, the 9th, Sunday, opening ceremony. You know, got to got interest from quite a few different dance troupes from the southeast corner of Queensland here. I'm going to participate, and also Northern New South Wales. Some mob from up far north Queensland are going to be part of that. We're going to sing up, the Sacred Fire, like we do on many occasions, when we have anniversary of the embassy here in Musgrave Park, when we remember our old people, which is, the most important thing, the first thing that we must remember. We'll also, before the rally and march starts at 4 p.m, from 9 a.m. onwards, we'll have yarning circles talking about anti-intervention, police brutality, youth suicide, over-incarceration, the whole program is based around the issues that we face as Indigenous peoples, and then these issues that, we face, have been imposed on us, so we've got to create the solutions, to these problems that have been imposed on us, and the only way that, problems can be solved is by us, who have been, sadly bestowed, with this legacy of genocide and dispossession, by the oppressor, and that's what these 20 richest nations are. They're oppressors, and they continue to, reap, what they steal off Indigenous nations, all over this world.
Agreed. Thank you, Bo. And, you fellas inspire me down in Melbourne. I've watched what Brisbane Embassy does. They've got an amazing food program up here.
Mm-hmm. The food program is about just under a year and a half old now. We've got about 200 different Aboriginal families on the food program. That's from the inner city here, Brisbane, to the north side, out to Caboolture.
That's pretty good, ain't it?
Out to Ipswich. On the south side of Brisbane, we're trying to get, we yesterday, one of the guys who does the run, he actually, put another 35 names down, families, sorry. And when I looked at the list, most of those families, had 5-6 kids.
Yeah.
In
stark contrast to what the leaders are eating up there in the hotel, ain't it?
That's it. And that's the big thing about, with the food program, is, letting our mob know, that there's an alternative side, to what's going on out there. The food program is one of the main core actions of the embassy.
Yep.
Another one is the magazine, Brisbane Blacks.
Yeah.
This last issue 6, will be the last for the year and the last with the name Brisbane Blacks. The next one that will be out will be for Invasion Day. Different name. It's going to be called Black Nations Rising, and the reason why we changed the name just to give it more of a national feel, yep. Because we called it Brisbane Blacks because it was just a small publication, yep. About what the embassy was doing, mm-hmm. When we started it 2 years ago, then we relaunched it a year and a half ago, mm-hmm. And the whole point of relaunching it was to get the magazine and also to add discussion, from what's going on around the country and also an international perspective on decolonization, sovereignty and resistance. And, and you read these issues of Brisbane Blacks now and there's articles, from Canada, write-ups about what's going on in New Zealand, in different parts around the world, and how important, decolonisation is as a whole, as Indigenous peoples, because when we talk about decolonisation, it's not a separate issue as Aboriginal people on this continent. It's a holistic thing when we look at it, because at the moment, within a week and a half, less than 100 metres away from us, 20 richest nations are talking about how they can deprive us, as people, and the continents that they're attached to with depriving. Right. So it's about us, start getting that dialogue, and start talking about creating the solutions to the problems that they impose on us.
Yep.
And that's the whole point about, the First Nations response to G20, because or the Indigenous response to G20, or the Aboriginal, whatever you want to call it, the Native response,
Sure.
That's one of the core actions of the embassy, and the last one is the Grannies group. They're actually part of a national Grannies group now. Annie Karen, Jay, Sister Chrissy Lee, and a few other people, they actually go onto court, they've actually sat down and read the Queensland legislation, for Child Safety Act.
Yeah.
And they go onto court, and they go on for bat, for our mob, and they say, you're breaking this here, you're doing this here wrong.
And Bo, is that in direct response to the high percentage of kids being taken away from homes?
Definitely, definitely. Yeah, that's the response that we have to take, you know, because the organisation that have been set up in place, you know, to prevent this, you know, isn't really doing anything. You know, if anything, you know, the only thing they're doing, you know, is partaking in, you know, the genocide of these young kids. And that's what it is, you know. We have to call it genocide, you know, because they're preventing, you know, these young fellows to learn their song, dance and story, you know.
Yeah, of course. You take any kids out of their family environment, you're restricting them from their culture.
That's it. You know, like, they're the three main actions that we revolve around as the embassy.
Yeah.
But also, you know, we talk about, you know, we get out into the community, you know, we support other community community actions, you know, whenever anything's going out in Logan or anywhere else, you know, or, you know, we set up forums and discussions, you know.
I got to admit, probably about a month ago, I requested a copy of the Brisbane Blacks to be sent out home. And, got it, and I've had the second seventh edition lately, and that's where I get my information from, basically.
That's it, you know, and the funny thing about it, you know, is, you know, Brisbane Blacks is the only independent, you know, grassroots media, Aboriginal media in the country.
Yep.
You know, you have, you know, Courier Mail or Indigenous Times, you know, which is government funded, you know, and owned, you know, and the main editors are white people.
Yeah.
You know, and half the people that are writing articles, you know, are white fellas, you know.
That's right.
And, you know, independent Indigenous media, grassroots media is essential, you know, to us, you know, to get our message across.
Yeah.
You know, and you look through the sea, there's nothing in here to do with any mining.
No.
You know, which is sort of advertised in these other magazines, you know.
Sure.
When we was in Canada, you know, we met three different four different independent Indigenous grassroots media, people. You know, one was multimedia, you know, a sister girl called Reclaim Turtle Island, another brother, Gord Hill. You know, he's like, if you ever want to read some really good stuff on decolonization and resistance, Google Gord Hill and Warrior Publications. That's his publications.
Yep.
Met another brother by the name of John Chateau. He's got a publication called Intercontinental Cry. Yep. He talks about a lot of international actions and what they're doing around the world to do, against decolonization and resistance and that there. And then
and they'd be more than welcome to send it into, you know, those articles to you?
All three of those people have actually written articles for Brisbane Blacks, and also some of the articles that have been put in Brisbane Blacks, you know, get shared, you know, on their media and that there. And Red Power Media, you know, was another one. We actually met all four of those people, you know, through Canada, through Turtle Island, I should say. You know, it was a good experience to see, you know, how other Indigenous peoples, you know, are resisting, you know, colonial policies and, you know, assimilation policies.
Can I just ask you on that, Bo? What did you take away from the whole experience? I mean, I mentioned earlier to Viv and Rob about how I read the article where their resistance was, you know, well planned.
Definitely. Yeah. Like, when we, like, in terms of, like, resistance and. You know, like, they've been doing it, you know, for 500 years.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest thing.
Sure.
You know, like they've had a, you know, a conscious mind on how to, you know, resist and that thing, you know, and how to fight off this. So, you know, and I guess the hunger is on a more broader scale, you know, because, you know, like, invasions, you know, still, you know, the stages of invasion is still early. You know, it's still in the development stages.
Yeah.
You know, in this country.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like, you know, there's some parts of the country where, you know, like, they haven't seen white fellas.
Yeah.
You know, the first time I saw white fellas was in the, you know, early 1920s, 30s.
Sure.
In this country, you know, so, like, this is still a, you know, and that's what they say. You know, this is still a developing country. It is.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, like, the, you know, the way that they're surveying the land and destroying it. You know.
Yeah.
And I think, like, the biggest thing that we all got back, you know, from Canada, was how important, you know, direct front-on, you know, action is. You know, whether it's blockading, you know, mining companies or blockading highways and roads and that thing.
Yeah,
you know? And how powerful that is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's from, like, a non-violent confrontation.
Do you see that here in Australia? Could we move to that level?
Definitely. You know, if we can, you know, strategize more and I guess, you know, have more time to plan a lot of things and actually sit down with each other more.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of the times, you know, like now, you know, like mob are just, you know, arriving here, you know, and you know, it's like we're meeting each other for the first time.
That's right. You know, so is that communication through radio, community radio, is that gelling the people together?
Definitely,
united resistance?
Yeah, definitely.
And cyberspace too.
Yeah, that's it. That's
big
it.
Heart,
cyberspace.
Big
yep.
heart.
You know, like radio will always, you know, like grassroots radio will always have its place, you know, within society, you know, and the main fact is because radio is the only form of media that could be live,
yeah.
and on the spot, you
yeah.
know,
mm. yeah.
you know, TV, print or internet, you know, that can't, you know,
yeah.
And like internet, you know, like that's a very, very great source,
yeah.
you know, to pass,
yeah.
to, you know, to stay in contact, you know, like when that stuff was going on, when Michael Brown got shot by
Ferguson.
And murdered
yeah.
in Ferguson,
yeah.
you know, and when they were rioting, there was Palestinian fellas, you know, getting on Twitter, the activists,
yeah.
and they were tweeting the Ferguson activists saying, "This is how you resist. This is how you heal yourself."
Yep.
From pepper spray and the gas bombs.
Oh,
and
nice.
You know,
oh,
like they were actually tweeting
these sort of countermeasures.
You know, like they were actually tweeting each other.
Yeah.
You know, on how
yeah.
to, you know, resist.
Yeah.
You know, and you know,
whereas they would not have had that knowledge prior to that instant sort of messaging.
That's it.
Sort of
that's
thing.
It. You know, like yeah.
Bo, just before we go on a bit further,
yep.
I want to take back to the magazine and just
yep.
let the listeners know where they can get a copy, order
yes,
a copy.
Oh, sorry. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. You know, you can order a copy of Brisbane Blacks. All you have to do is email, go on to Facebook/ Brisbane Blacks, inbox the Brisbane Blacks page. If you're First Nations, inbox your mob, where you're from, and your address, and we'll send you out the latest edition of Brisbane Blacks. And if you would like a copy of previous issues, just let us know. This is the sixth issue that we've put out. And also, if you're non-First Nations, you got to pay $5.
Yep.
Pay the rent. There you know. Do your part. Nah.
And we'll keep copies at 3CR.
Definitely, you know, because I know Sister Pakiri and Mariki, well, Pakiri, who's she's actually from up here. She's from Stradbroke Island. She's Goorumpul. She's the co-editor of Brisbane Blacks magazine. So there'll be another hub down there in Melbourne. And... well, we're actually trying to get on to some unions in Melbourne to help print. So if there's any unions, you know, listening,
cool.
you know, like,
yeah.
You know, if you're interested, you know, inbox the Brisbane Blacks page, you know, and let us know if you're interested in printing some magazines, you know, being a part of, you know.
Come on, your Melbourne mob. Get informed. Yeah.
That's it, you know.
Yeah. There's amazing solidarity stuff going on in Melbourne. The protest weekly, you know, for... Our last solidarity one I was at was Islamophobia. Rally against
yeah.
Islamophobia.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
this.
Yeah. Oh, okay, yep.
You know,
yep.
Just hate. They put out this divide. I want to take a whole group of people,
yeah.
hello, and then give them
it's a
definition.
It's an ugly
definitely.
Thing, ain't it?
And make the others hate. Make
yeah.
them divide and conquer. That's what
that's
they
it,
do,
yeah.
isn't
and,
it?
So and like that comes back
it's
to.
It's important.
And like that comes back to two main things. You know, one. Is that there'll never be no justice because there's never no truth.
Mm.
And because, you know, in a racist society, racism is normal.
That's right. It's
you know,
normalised.
And that's what we've got to, it's normalised. We've got to understand that.
Institutionalised
to the point of, you know, where, you know, our own children,
mm.
you know, our own young people, you know, will decide to, you know, sort of be prejudiced, you know, to our own mob.
That's
you know,
right.
For the way they look.
Yeah.
You know, or for the way, you know, You know, they are. You know, if
yeah.
they, if they, you know, if they want to sit in the park and overcharge, enough's wrong with that there.
Yeah, and that's
you know,
why we've got to be careful. We've
that's
got
it.
To,
that's it. That's it. You know, like too many of our mob,
yeah.
you know, fall under this trap. You know, of you know, thinking, you know, from a white perspective. You know, and a lot of people. You know, I think that's the biggest thing that you know it's got to be understood in this country, is that you know people can get sucked in. You know, really easily and quickly.
Yeah.
You know, especially you know, like with the rallies, the
mm.
Islamophobia rallies.
Sure. Yep.
You know, no, if they're not racist, you know, to us,
yep.
if they're not hating us, you know, it's
yep.
a Muslim mob. You know,
that's right.
So I think you know a lot of the big stuff that should be happening is us as the Aboriginal people here
mm.
and the Muslim community should be doing a lot more stuff
yes.
together
because
yeah,
we're the
Palestine,
Palestine, stuff with Palestine,
definitely,
I agree.
You know,
100%.
Definitely, you know, because like we're the two
yeah.
most. as the ostracised communities, you know,
marginalised
communities here in Australia.
Absolutely.
You know, and the more that we start working together, and the more that we start, you know, organising and getting our dialogue together, you know, the bigger our message can be.
Absolutely. You know? Fully agree with that.
That's awesome. I think we're going to go to a song and we'll come back in a minute with another guest, possibly.
Yes.
And we're going to play Treaty. And this for Collingwood Mob.
Treaty now or what? What do you think about treaty people? Is that the way to go on this one? Callum, I'm talking to Callum, who's been involved with the Brisbane Aboriginal Sovereign Embassy for probably the last 3 to 4 years, I'm guessing there?
2 years.
2 years, okay. And also I'm talking to Jade, and she's a member of the Brisbane Aboriginal Sovereign Embassy as well. I've noticed the idea of black nationalism being promoted. Can you Because I'm not sure, I'm not really understanding myself, so you, can you explain that to me and the rest of our mob out there?
Sure, sure. So the whole concept of black nationalism was something that came about in, I think, the late 1800s and the early 20th century with people like Marcus Garvey talking about Pan-Africanism and need for Africans or the descendants of African slaves to return to their tribal homelands in Africa, because they said, Marcus Garvey said that there was no future for, there was no real future for black people in what he called the hells of North America, and that they needed to return to their tribal homelands. So then people throughout the 20th century, like Malcolm X, took up the mantra of black nationalism, and he talked about black nationalism being three things: black control of black politics in the black community, black control of the black economy in the black community, and the black control of the social and the cultural facets of the black community. And he also talked about black nationalism, I guess, as being a, what he and the other, I guess, people who believed in black nationalism, as being a viable alternative to assimilation into the colonial state.
That's, you're talking, that was been around for over 100 years.
Mm.
How's it panned out? Have you got good examples of successful?
I guess one of the best examples would be
Turtle Island, hey?
Yeah, like, yeah. Black nationalism or nationalism from the perspective of an oppressed ethnic group. So you've got the Black Panthers. They had a food program. They had a newspaper. They fed children before they went to school. They had all these programs dedicated to uplifting black people, and they talked about black power. Black power and black nationalism are one and the same, because they're all about empowering oppressed peoples. And I guess when it comes to Aboriginal nationalism or Native nationalism or Indigenous nationalism, it's linked to that, but it's got a whole new level, or not a new level, but a much much deeper level to it with regards to land.
Therefore, is the word nationalism a good name for it?
Because I guess the way we see it is that if we talk about ourselves as Indigenous nations, we talk about our nationhood. And if we talk about our nationhood being our rights and responsibilities, the manifestation of our nationhood and our rights and responsibilities is our nationalism. It's understanding that us identifying as Ngunyawarra, as Kumbanga, as Gamilaroi, as all these different tribal nations, Aboriginal nationalism or Indigenous nationalism is the understanding that decolonisation starts with us in this country. If you just talk about decolonisation in general, you need a starting point. And the starting point is those who have the closest connection to this land and have had that connection to this land since the first sunrise.
It also starts with yourself personally first.
Exactly.
Before the community becomes that.
Exactly.
It's a number of people thinking that same way.
It's got to be that raising of consciousness, and it starts with, as Uncle Paulie Spearham says, it starts with the individual, and it starts with the family, then the clan, and then the nation.
And, like, it's been 100 years, and, you know, I've sort of had a look at what's happened in Black America, and I don't know if that's been a successful program.
I guess it's like, I remember watching the ASIO...
But I just want to add that it was under a lot of duress and pressure to make sure it never worked too. So.
Exactly. I guess it's the same in this country. Like, I watched a doco about the ASIO files of Gary Falk, and he said, like, back then what we identified with was, as the Aboriginal embassy and Aboriginal activists, we were Aboriginal nationalists. And that meant identifying as a particular group and part, a member of a particular group for a particular reason. And that is no longer, I guess, about... It's not just about rights. Rights are only so much. But we need to talk about responsibilities, because our responsibilities as Indigenous peoples lie in upholding and protecting the two most important relationships that exist. And that is the relationship that we have with each other and the relationship that we have with our land. Because if the relationship that we have with our land is not a very healthy relationship, as currently exists in this world, then the relationship that we have with each other is going to be very, very poor and unhealthy. So Aboriginal nationalism to us, or Indigenous nationalism, is about protecting those and upholding those relationships, and then fighting for our rights, asserting our rights. So asserting our rights to political independence, asserting our rights to maintain our cultures against assimilation, asserting our rights to our lands, our territories, and then protecting and upholding those relationships. I guess if you were to look at it in a framework Aboriginal nationalism would be about two things, and that's resistance against the ongoing onslaught of colonisation, and then the revival of that which underpinned our society, our civilization prior to invasion. So it's resistance and revival.
And I'd say it'd have a lot to do with our identity too.
Exactly, right? That's where
it's
it lies.
Creating recreating our identity under circumstances here.
Mm.
So it's a lot to do with who we are and
exactly.
who we think we are.
And why we identify in that particular way. We're not just another ethnic minority group in slowly being merged and assimilated into a colonial state. We are who we are for a reason.
Is that a right thing? You know, like we have rights over and above the invaders and the colonizers.
It's our bloodline connection to this country, our respective countries, that give us those rights and those responsibilities above all others. And it's not to do with this group superior to that. It's about who has what responsibilities and rights to which area and for what reason.
Yeah, and there's good reasons why average people should be in control of a lot of things in this country. It's vitally important that we are in those positions.
Exactly.
And it's like to do with the demise of the environment, the fact that our customary laws are not being recognised in this country. I see there's a parallel between genocide and ecocide.
Mm, exactly.
And that's because there's no respect for the customary law. Anyway, I want to ask Jade a question. You're a student of Queensland University?
I'm not, actually.
You're not.
No.
I should have done more research.
I guess my full-time job is working with the embassy and the Brisbane Sovereign Grannies Group, like fighting against the second stolen generation or the continuing stolen generation. That's what I do with most of my time. And then my paid work is I just work in a cafe.
Okay. Yeah. So the second stolen generation, I want to expand a bit on that because it's pretty full on, you know. Like there's never been a time where they haven't been trying to destroy our communities.
Yeah, that's it. And the fact is that it's happening worse, like now today, than it ever has in the history of, since Captain Cook came here, really. I think the statistics are 14,000 Aboriginal kids are currently in out-of-home care, which is... I think it was five times the rate of the stolen generation that everyone knows about. Yeah, so it's still happening today.
Yeah, it's pretty full on. And do you think it's a deliberate act to make sure that our children aren't with their families, or do you think that's just they still really think that they're doing us a favour by removing our children and bringing them up, in the white fella way?
Yeah.
Do they really think they're doing us a favour there? I can't see it myself.
I reckon it's it's really just all about the past policies that existed. Like the Aborigines Protection Act is alive and well today in the Child Protection Act. Like, they changed the name, but it's still the same thing. So to me, it is still genocide. They might say they're doing it for our own good, but they've always said they're doing it for our own good. Doesn't mean it's not genocide.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a good. Totally genocide has been since day one. That's been their intent, as far as I'm concerned. The intent to commit genocide on our people began in England, around the round table in England, even before they got here. Discovered Australia. Mm. Apparently, he wasn't even a captain, this guy. He was just a lowly lieutenant. The history's not really fully understood by people, And I don't think people really realise the magnitude or the dimension of the crime that's been committed here. This is out of sight, out of mind from the rest of the world, Australia. It's been a 200-year war going on here. And the ways that they're doing things now is just a little bit more sophisticated in the way they're committing their acts of genocide on us. It's through their control of welfare and things like that. So it's pretty disturbing. What do we do? We're here at the G20, at Musgrave Park. It's all set up for us to. We've got the global leaders across the road here. What's your plan, sis?
My plans. All of my plans really go back to native nationalism. Like Callum said, it really is all about resistance and reconstruction and revival. So, my plans are all about you know, reconnecting and reviving culture in my country, in my community, in my family, and then resisting any way I can. And if that means like going out onto the streets and protesting and talking my talk and getting arrested, then so be it. You know, like it's, you know, it's still happening. It's still a war. We're still in a war. Yeah.
If you had a chance to address the leaders of the G20, what would you tell them?
What wouldn't you tell them?
Yeah, what wouldn't I tell them?
Callum, you can have a go at that. What would you tell them?
I guess I've been thinking about this, and it's, to me, it's not about what we tell them, it's about what we tell other Indigenous and oppressed peoples around this world. And that is those three things. That is resist, that is revive, and that is decolonize. That is, if we do not resist, then we've already lost. If we do not fight, we've already lost. And if we give up that fight, we've already lost.
If you don't fight, you lose.
That's it, yeah.
Well, our mob put up a mighty fight, you know. Like, we're the only Commonwealth country out of 76 not to have a treaty with this devil called the British Crown. That's a fight in itself. That's a form of resistance. We physically resisted them. You know, how many men, women and children lie dead on Battlefield Australia?
Frontier wars.
How many monuments to those people? Yeah. Now, who spilt their blood defending this country? Our people. So there's been a mighty fight. And, you know, the fact that we have the oldest occupation site in front of a parliament in the world says a lot about our resistance. And, like, we're pretty decimated in terms of, you know, we lost probably, I'd say we lost about 95% of our people.
Disease.
In the colonisation process.
Massacres.
So that 5% is holding that still together. That's a mighty fight that we're holding on to. And I don't think we've let that go. That's why we talk about our sovereignty, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah.
We're still fighting for our sovereignty. We haven't let that thing go.
Uncle, do you think that colonisation is not something that happened in the past, but something that's continuing today, like something that's still going on?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, I'll know the day that colonisation ends in this country. I'll know it.
Yeah.
I'll see it coming and I'll know when it happens.
Our people are still dying, like, today.
Absolutely. You know, I believe that any Aboriginal person that dies prematurely in this country, for whatever reason, is a result of the colonisation process. You know, it's just, without treaty, we're still in a state of undeclared war.
Mm.
So we need to end that war. Need to stop the genocide of our people. Need to create a proper legal foundation, like a treaty would do. Mm. And, you know, I think in hindsight, we've seen what happened with treaties around the world. I think it's, we write this treaty. We write the contractual arrangements for the occupation of non-Aboriginal people in this country. That's all a treaty is. It's a contractual arrangement. We could do that. We're getting the sign to wind up. Black nationalism. Give it one more plug before we wind it up, Russ.
Aboriginal nationalism, from an Aboriginal perspective, is all about three things: resistance, revival, and the ultimate end goal of decolonisation.
All right, beautiful. We might end it on that. Thanks, Colin. Thanks, Jade.
Thank you.
Back to the studio.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.